Hello. We are here. I'm not sure if you've heard, either on Front Page or just word of mouth, but Legacy Health has a podcast by the name of Engaging Our People. Today, I'll be the host. We have more of a rotating host setup. I'm Jonathan Stevens. I'm the host for this episode. I work in the marketing department. I am a creative project manager, and I've been with Legacy for almost 7 years.
Hello, I'm Tasun Kim. I'm Legacy's inaugural vice president and chief diversity officer, and I've been here now about 9 months.
And hello, everyone. My name is Simone Carter, and I'm the DEI program manager, and I've been at Legacy Health for 24 years.
Cool deal. Well, if either one of you can break down what DEI is or what the purpose of the work that you do and why it's important to Legacy, or maybe just like kind of getting give an intro to the folks of the type of work you do and what DEI stands for.
Sure. So DEI, the acronym, stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And though all of those letters have a very discrete definitions attached to them. But in general, for Legacy, and I would say in healthcare generally, diversity is usually focusing on the importance of a diverse workforce and a recognition that our patient population is also very diverse, meaning we are not monolithic. There is no standard history or context that can be one size fits all, so to speak. And that diversity is something that is rich and valuable and not necessarily a problem to be fixed. Equity, that is a concept that people and conditions and treatment is based equally across populations. And that if there isn't that equality, that every effort is being made so that that kind of equity is created and those conditions are created across diverse populations. Inclusion is really focusing on process and culture of an organization so that, you know, you could technically have a diverse workforce, for example, but certain peoples in that workforce might not actually feel or know that they're not included in decision-making. They are not included in the room when important decisions and processes are considered, or they don't feel included in terms of their experiences as fitting into the mission of an organization. Right. So inclusion is one of those principles that really have to do with the way that we actually treat people and how those people feel about being a part of the organization.
I appreciate that information. Simone, did you have anything to speak to just in regards to DEI itself or why the work is important?
Yeah, I can just, you know, talk about my work as a DEI program manager and what I manage at the areas in Legacy Health.
Okay.
The areas that I manage in Legacy Health is diverse employee groups, such as the employee resource groups, also known as ERG groups. Mm-hmm. I also manage the emergency food support program for our employees, and I assist in the bilingual competency program, and I also do individual confidential consultations in the area of workplace harassment, bullying, and discrimination. So as you can see, Jonathan, that's a full platter,
but
right?
That's what I'm gonna say. I've known you for quite a while since I've been here, and I didn't even know. Until now, I have not known everything that you do. And just hearing you say that, you wear many hats and you do much. Is it accurate to say that you two are the first DEI officers to serve in this capacity at Legacy?
Oh no, Jonathan, that's not the case at all. It actually dates back to 2010 when Sheila Murty was the Director of Human Resources. She actually formed the Diversity Advisory Council, which is also known as the DAC Council. And she also formed the employee resource groups at that time. During that time, she mentored Pamela Weatherspoon. I'm sure you remember Pamela when she was here at Legacy Health. Pamela was a community relations specialist, and Miss Sheila Murty actually mentored Pamela during that time. And when Pamela was in that role, fast forward, Pamela became the first Black Employee Resource Chair for the Black Employee Resource Group.
Wow.
She also, believe it or not, was the first DEI program manager.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
She got that role like just before she left Legacy, I believe.
Actually, exactly.
Her office was right in that corner right there.
Exactly, yes.
And not to go too far back, but you mentioned Sheila, and you said something about a DAC.
Yes.
What is a DAC?
So the Diversity Advisory Council is a council that actually set precedents for DEI work within the organization. Mm-hmm. The members of the council was from management up. There were the chairs and co-chairs from the ERG groups that sat at the DAC council. And that's kind of where all the DI work, actually, the framework came from, that council there.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Thank you for that information.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that Simone shared that context, because oftentimes there is this perception that when a DEI department or a chief diversity officer is hired, that it is at that point that DEI work is beginning. And that's rarely the case. There are folks that have been doing this difficult, challenging work even before the acronym DEI was even a thing.
Right.
And so I'm just really glad that in preparation for this podcast, that Simone and I were able to reach back and interview Pamela. And I had spoken to Sheila quite a few months back when I got here, knowing that I couldn't have possibly been the first person to do this work.
Yeah. No, I'm glad that you did do that, because history, all of that stuff is good just for like context. Because again, I didn't know her. I thought Pam was the first and the only that had ever done anything DEI-wise at Legacy. So definitely good to know. So how did we get here? If we had these two individuals driving DEI work in 2015, why do we need a chief diversity officer, a DEI program manager? And if I'm not mistaken, you have like three additional team members that you're bringing on, correct?
That is correct. Thank you for asking that question. You know, a little bit more context here. You know, chief diversity officer positions are relatively new in terms of healthcare, even in executive positions at organizations. I myself have had a lot of experience with diversity officers in higher education, and I like to think that that's an area that has really incubated this executive position and has done quite a bit in order to restructure and just change the culture of higher educational institutions that were not prepared to have such a diversity of college students and faculty. So it's really quite exciting work. But in healthcare, although there were CDO positions throughout the nation in healthcare and hospital systems, it really wasn't until the murder of George Floyd, plus the COVID-19 pandemic, that really kind of escalated the need for many of these healthcare systems to create or elevate DEI work so that they would hire a chief diversity officer. I myself was not in Portland in 2020, so I want to just kind of turn it over here to Simone, where she can share a little bit about how all of the things, very, very similar things that were happening here in Portland and the crucial conversations that were happening at Legacy helped to even create the portfolio that we have, which, yes, includes additional team members that we'll be bringing on.
Right on.
Yeah, thank you, Tessin. In 2020, there was a lot of different things going on in the city of Portland, not just in the city of Portland, the state, and actually across the United States,
right.
Due to the murder of George Floyd. I should say in reaction to the murder of George Floyd. In the city of Portland, we see a lot of protesting,
right.
You know, a lot of the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, had kind of took its form and, you know, and was a lot of base of a lot of protesting that we saw during that time. However, you know, you've seen a lot of folks taking, when I say folks, organizations, large and small, taking a stand against racism, you know, publicly. And that's something we had never saw prior to 2020. And it was amazing to see, actually. It was very, very clear during that time that silence was not an option. You know, you had to, you know, either speak against racism or not, right? So in June, also, Legacy's health president, she actually sent an email out to the organization that stated that Legacy condemned racism. And that was a huge, huge thing.
Yeah, that was very huge. And I remember
you were there, you know. Do you remember that email?
Yeah, I remember it because things had happened prior to that. So I wasn't here like when like Trayvon Martin or, you know, but the George Floyd, this wasn't the first time that something like this had happened. And out of any time that I seen that happen while I was at Legacy or just any kind of like police brutality, it was one of those things that just wasn't spoken about. Like you come to work, you know, you do your job, you go home. But, you know, political things like that, we didn't really discuss. So for Catherine, you know, at the top of the top to send a very clear message to everyone that this type of behavior will not be tolerated, you know, and things like that. To me, I felt as a person of color that works for Legacy, I felt empowered. I felt seen. I felt I just felt like I mattered. Whereas I feel like before that was something that I would just have to kind of keep to myself and, you know, speak with my wife about when I got home or, you know, one of those kind of things. But I didn't feel like it was a conversation to have at work until Catherine sent that email.
Yeah, that email was very powerful. As you share, you know, your reflection, I reflect back to, you know, the Berg leadership, the Black Employee Resource Group, you know, which I'm co-chair of. And during that time, I remember us having discussion around the email, and we really appreciated seeing our leadership take that formal stand. However, we felt they could have did more, right? Something more needed to be done. And I think that's the time when we, when I say we, the chairs and the co-chairs of the Black Employee Resource Group, we kind of sat back and identified, you know, the climate and what was going on in our community, you know, because during that time, a lot of Black folks in our community, they were experiencing generational grief. You know, because as you said and stated that, you know, George Floyd's murder was not the first murder that we experienced in our community. You know, this is something we've seen year after year after year after year, you know. And so the generational grief was real during that time in the Black community. And so being a co-chair of Berg, I was very fortunate and we were very fortunate to be able to lean on one another. And I think that's why ERGs are so important, because you can come together and share your experiences, right? And in a safe place, right? And so that's what we did. You know, the leaders of Berg, we shared, you know, our grief with one another, right? However, during that time of reflection and sharing, we thought about the other Black employees at Legacy, you know, and if we were experiencing generational grief, you know, many of them had to be, right? And so that's when we reached out to Legacy's leadership and said, you know, we're experiencing generational grief, and we know Black employees are, and we need to do more. We need to check in on them and see how they're doing. You know, we need to line up, you know, our actions with our organization's mission, you know, our patients, our community, our employees, you know, in good health. And right now, your Black employees are not in good health. So we requested to host an event, and the event, we named it Take a Knee. And the Take a Knee event consisted that we all come together in unity and stand collectively against racism. So our leadership, they supported the event. The event, and I believe you actually attended the event, Jonathan.
Yeah, I was right behind.
Yeah, you know, we started off in the atrium. There was supposed to be one location in the atrium at Legacy Emmanuel. And we were all going to collectively come together as one, all employees who wanted to participate. It was optional. And we would stand and take a knee for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. And in the flyer, I remember we were talking, we were grafting the flyer, and I was saying to the co-leads and the chairs of Berg, what if you can't take a knee. I got a bad right knee, but I want to participate, right?
Right.
And so I think it was either Vicky or Melody said, oh, well, that's easy. We'll just put it on the flyer. You know, hey, if you want to sit down for in a chair for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, yeah, that's fine. If you want to bow your head for that time period, it's fine. If you want to lift your fists, you know, yeah, that's fine. So I thought, oh, yeah, that's cool. That covers everybody, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we put that on the flyer. So it was interesting how it took off because the word got out about Legacy yeah. Health. Mm-hmm. The word got out, and it was interesting because one location in the atrium, and one day in June at noon, and one location turned to all Legacy Health mm-hmm. locations, mm-hmm. and people participated system wide.
Did you see the photos? So there were, and not to cut you off, were photos. You know, sometimes Legacy Health, they have the screensavers or the
yes,
kind of come up. Well, they had photos of everyone's Take a Knee event at the different sites, and that was like the screensaver for a little while. But I don't know if you've seen that or not.
No, yeah. But I would love.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I mean, because it was just like right after that one at Emmanuel, just boom, boom, like every site, clinics, just all system wide. I wish I was over Yammer then, because then I would have been, you know, sending those pictures out that way, just so everybody throughout the system could see just how impactful it was.
Oh, that's amazing. I didn't get a chance to see that. I would love to see that.
Yeah, I'll have to see who was responsible for that. I'll try to find those photos, because that's something that we could even bring up, you know, at an event, or, you know, just it's a historical, powerful moment that I feel like could be used for educational purposes.
Absolutely.
Just show the growth, mm-hmm. you know, that Legacy has had.
And I mean, that Legacy helped has, right? The yeah. growth, but that's part of our legacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that moment, that event, that Take the Knee event. So I would love to see those photos. Yeah. So fast forward, I got to give you a lot of information in a short period of time, Jonathan. But fast forward, you know, after the Take a Knee event, you know, and it was more than just Take the Knee. You know, that was an opportunity for some Black employees like myself and Melanie to share our personal experiences working at Legacy Health. And it was also a time, again, that we asked everyone to stand in unity, mm-hmm. you know, for the Take the Knee event. And then the last thing at the end of the event, we wrapped it up with a call to action, right? Mm-hmm. We requested that all leaders within Legacy Health check in on their Black employees
yeah.
because they were hurting. And I remember sharing with the group in the atrium that they needed to understand that many Black employees were experiencing the generational grief, and they actually felt like there was a knee on their necks. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was important to check on them, you yeah. know, to reach out and touch them. So,
and I do appreciate that too, because like right after that communication had went out, I had several people on my team in the marketing department just ask how I was doing. And you'd be surprised how that question can really make a person feel included or cared about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then the Berg, again, you know, as we shared our grief and we worked through that time and that season, we felt that we really needed to go beyond that. Mm-hmm. And we needed to go personally and check in on the Black employees at Legacy Health. So we went back yeah. to leadership and mm-hmm. said, you know, we need to host listening sessions. We need to provide a safe place for our Black employees to come together if they choose to mm-hmm. and be able to share their experiences and what they were feeling at that time. Mm-hmm. And so they did. Initially, we hosted 2 listening sessions, which turned into 4 listening sessions. Mm-hmm. We gleaned information from the listening sessions and we shared them with Legacy Leadership. And on sharing what we gleaned from the listening sessions, we provided recommendations as well.
Yeah. And I remember, not to go too deep into it, but I remember the listening sessions. And I remember during that period, I learned a lot just about Legacy employees in general, because, and more specifically Black employees, because at those listening sessions, it was all Black employees. It was a safe space so that you didn't have to feel like you couldn't speak up, or and a lot of people felt more comfortable speaking with other folks that I feel like they had like similar stories with. And you'd be surprised, like as one person would speak, then another person would be prompted to speak. And by the time we got to the end of the session, we were almost running over time for the session because so many people had something to say. A lot of people realized that they had been experiencing some of the same things, even though they work in a different unit or at a different building. And so just that connection and being able to connect with other people, I feel kind of trickled over into the BERG employee resource group attendance, because for employees who don't have other people of color or even other people that look like them in their work area, they feel more appreciated when they're able to come and connect with folks, even if it's just in the BERG meeting and speak about their experience, how work is going, just check in with folks. But again, sorry, I didn't mean to.
That's what the listening sessions were for. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, there were well checks, you know, and there were well checks done by people that looked like the people that we were checking on, you know, and so I felt honored to be a part of that. I still do then, and I do now. And I think it really helped a lot of people, Black employees, get through that dark time in our community.
Very much so. Very much so. It helped me for sure.
Yeah. So let's fast forward to the good stuff.
Oh, yeah. With the listening sessions, like, what was the result or what happened after that?
So the information we gleaned from the listening sessions, we put it all into a report, a PowerPoint presentation, actually, and re-presented it to Legacy's leadership. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we also presented some recommendations based on the information that we learned from the listening sessions. And then fast forward, we hear the news that Legacy's leadership had decided to hire a chief diversity officer, which actually shocked us all, you know, because that was definitely a big move for our organization, considering we didn't have anyone officially, you know, doing DEI work outside of the ERG groups.
But was that a part of you all's recommendations? Like when you said you sent some recommendations to leadership, was that?
Yeah. Well, Burke's recommendation was a director in that role. And what shocked us was leadership came back with a chief diversity officer position.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then following that, shortly after, Tess and Kim was hired as a chief diversity officer. And we were all over the top excited. A little while after that, her hiring transpired, she notified the organization that she would be hiring for additional staff and it would be a department.
One quick question. You may have already answered it, but what's the difference, and either one of you can answer, between having a director that does DEI work versus a CDO?
I'll let you go ahead and answer that.
So the CDO position here is at the vice presidential level, right?
Gotcha.
And so what that means is that you are at the table when decisions are being made about strategy, about employees, about the resources that you need. So you have not only the visibility and some would say the authority to do this work, I'm also sharing this information with other leaders in a very systematic way rather than a haphazard, reactionary type of way.
Gotcha. Thank you for explaining that.
On part two of Engaging Our People.
The organization in general was broadly in support of us being a diversity, equity, and inclusion focused organization with an aspiration to be anti-racist in whatever way that we could. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there was also a lot of confusion about what it would mean. What are the goals? What are the metrics to ensure that we are a diversity, equity, and inclusion focused organization?
This is your host, Jonathan Stevens, signing off on the first episode of Engaging Our People. Stay tuned for part two of this conversation with Simone and Tessin coming at you soon.